Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 38 of the SmackDown Wind Down, recapping the highs and lows from the season premiere of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. I am your host and humble guide, Keela Cash. Thank you so much for joining me as week 38 of WrestleSubtopia comes to a close. Happy Saturday morning, afternoon, and evening to you all as a busy week in the worlds of WWE and AEW draws to a close. And this wraps up the 2020 WWE Draft. Monday Night Raw and Friday Night SmackDown have been reset. For now, the question is how long Vince McMahon will have patience for these new shows. If the creative does or doesn't stick, when will he revert back to a wild card rule or the brand-to-brand invitational? And yes, Survivor Series, when we've already established people can jump shows multiple times per year, but it's the one time we go head-to-head for brand supremacy. It's a lame gimmick. I wished they would be more creative. It's dumb to do a draft right around the time for Survivor Series when new people are just getting on a show and have no loyalty to speak of whatsoever. But the November Classic does provide some moments of intrigue in terms of dream matchups we never thought possible, which gives us hope for the future. So that's a small consolation prize, despite the hokiness of the brand supremacy concept. And a big question is, what role will NXT play in next month's pay-per-view? Now, they were in the thick of a war with AEW last fall, and the tide turned a little bit during this tri-branded war leading up to Survivor Series. Will they do it again once again to pop those ratings for everyone involved? Might not be a bad idea, but you have to make it make sense and make the matchups as intriguing as possible. And if they can do that, then I will let this brand supremacy crap slide, but not by much. But ultimately, this is about resetting two shows for the next year heading into WrestleMania season. It's establishing feuds and stars to get them ready for the biggest show of the year. Raw, even a year later, has been completely flipped upside down. The notion of building people from the roots up has been erased due to the departure of Paul Heyman from the executive director position of Monday Night Raw. And over on SmackDown, I have been very, very adamant about the structure and the presentation of SmackDown since the beginning of this podcast in late January. And there were times when I thought this was the weakest show in the entire WWE ecosystem. I put it below Main Event and 205 Live. That's how sterile the presentation was. And it wasn't until the empty arena era took place where we got to see people break through, such as a Sonya Deville, a Mandy Rose, an Otis, and the growth of Bayley and Sasha Banks carrying a company on their back this entire summer, along with Asuka, Kairi Sane, Io Shirai, Nikki Cross, and Alexa Bliss. They really elevated the women's division to new heights during a most trying time to be a wrestling fan and wrestler, trying to get something out of very little when you don't have that crowd participation. And then we saw the reemergence of Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, completely revamped, reimagined as a character and as a performer. And he has been the standout star on WWE television the last couple of months. And Jey Uso coming into his own, not being in a tag team with his brother due to injury. And he's shining bright. So we do see SmackDown with a clear focus, a clear direction for the future. Is it all perfect? Absolutely not. But every show has its flaws. But SmackDown has worked very hard the past several months to correct those issues and truly become a modernized product that looks like professional wrestling in 2020. And that is a giant leap for them. And they have to please Fox. This is a $1 billion deal for 5 years. It's underperformed in some ways. You want to bring some aces along, such as a Bianca Belair, a Seth Rollins, a Rey Mysterio, a Dominic Mysterio, a Kevin Owens, and a Murphy that has a world of potential to be great. Add in the Wyatt squads, Liv Morgan and Ruby Riott, and you do have a strong women's division if you are going to put them in the position to thrive. There are a lot of diamonds in the rough that can be stars if the creative team has patience. I do think there's a strong voice in that room that can get through Vince McMahon and say, here it is. and we look at Big E as a prime example that could be something big, every pun intended, heading into 2021, and I'm definitely looking forward to that. For Monday Night Raw, I will have extensive thoughts heading into their season premiere next week, but it's all about the Blue brand as we had our pre-show kick off the festivities, including a lot of cameo appearances from Stone Cold Steve Austin, a lot of Fox Sports personalities putting over SmackDown in the most scripted way possible, but it's good publicity nonetheless, and Triple H and Stephanie McMahon putting over the future, saying that Rhea Ripley could be the biggest star in the company in 5 years' time, headlining a WrestleMania, and also putting some shine on Bianca Belair as well. And she definitely got a spotlight later in the show as well, as we kick things off with the aforementioned Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, who are pretty much the faces of this company, because Vince does not like to be out in public unless he really needs to pop a rating. And I understand it. You're trying to present the future. And even though Vince still runs shit, that future is antiquated in terms of booking at times for WWE. It's very hit and miss. It can be revolutionary, and then at times it can be what the fuck. But you need those people in place, preferably as baby faces, to really get over this future talent in WWE. It was pretty much a reintroduction of Daniel Bryan, the New Day's farewell, and putting a strong emphasis on the main event of Roman Reigns defending the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman. But the highlight of this segment was Triple H throwing a palm tree of shade at Lars Sullivan by singing and dancing to Super Freak by Rick James. The insider knowledge of Lars Sullivan's extracurricular activities are well known on social media, and you can do a Google search to get all the information you need that does not need to be repeated here. I kind of went into it the last week or so, and he's in the news once again this week. But as I mentioned, there is one person that's really high on him, and that's Vince McMahon. So until that changes, nothing will change, unfortunately. But I did laugh my ass off once I caught the shade. Everyone caught the shade, from Cedric Alexander to people I know on Twitter. That was a moment. And Triple H is a professional shade artist, bar none. So with all of that being said, we had a brawl breakout between the Street Profits and Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode. Kevin Owens delivering cannonballs on the outside. Montez Ford doing a flip dive on the heels on the outside. And then the aforementioned Super Freak, Lars Sullivan, comes out and destroys every babyface in sight. Sami Zayn bids everyone adieu as the two people that were last seen together getting absolutely demolished by Sheamus a few months ago. One person I was giving extensive career advice to, Apollo Crews, and one I was practically begging to leave WWE on the nearest bullet train to New Japan, Chad Gable, together once again getting their asses kicked in a two-on-one situation until Jeff Hardy came out to make the save, set up his match against Sullivan after the commercial break. And this was a fine match. Jeff Hardy is a pro's pro and did everything he could to make Sullivan look good. And he got his fair share of offense in, including hitting the Twist of Fate. But before he can go for the Swanton Bomb, Lars got up and grabbed Jeff from the top rope and delivered the Freak Accident to get the 1-2-3, a decisive victory for Lars Sullivan. And let the record show that I think Corey Graves and Michael Cole called that man a freak at least 24 times. I think you need a shot every time they said freak. And if you did that, your ass would be on the floor, knocked the fuck out for the rest of the night. So I don't advise that for future reference. But the word freak was used plenty of times ad nauseum, and it really annoyed me. But I just went back to my happy place of Triple H doing a jig and singing Super Freak by Rick James. And in my perfect world, I had the real Rick James and Dave Chappelle as Rick James doing a duet together, and that would have been icing on the proverbial cake. But we can't have nice things, can we? Next up was an outstanding video package on Bianca Belair, a great hype video, and it highlighted her speed, her strength, her agility, being the fastest, toughest, roughest, the EST of WWE. And it seems as if this young lady is going to get the rocket push. And if she is not, SmackDown Women's Champion by WrestleMania 2021. We got problems. She better be a finalist, if not the winner of the 2021 Royal Rumble. She better be in prime position to take out Sasha Banks or Bayley heading into WrestleMania season. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about it. She is the future. Every time she's on television, she stands out. She makes you sit up straight and makes you pay attention to everything that she's doing because it's hella creative and cool and innovative and, most importantly, badass. And I need Bianca on my television screen every single chance I get because she's that good. I have seen her growth from a rocky performance at TakeOver Phoenix almost a couple of years ago to having a breakthrough moment at TakeOver New York a few months later, having a standout fall on NXT television, especially at War Games 3, inside that structure, having another moment at Survivor Series on SmackDown last fall in the lead up to said Survivor Series, her standout performance at this year's Royal Rumble, her feud with Rhea Ripley that transitioned to a brief match with Charlotte Flair, and you know for my due diligent listeners out there how I felt about that ending. I'm not going to get into that, but she had another great match that could have been a series of great matches if WWE had the wherewithal to put Bianca in that match against Rhea and Charlotte at WrestleMania before the world went to shit due to the pandemic. But even in a more downsized setting, it would have really benefited WWE to have that match at the biggest show of the year because it made storyline sense. But WWE had other ideas, and she did get called up to Monday Night Raw post-WrestleMania. She was seen sparingly on television at a brief scrap with Zelina Vega, but she has been dominating main event all spring and summer. But now it's time for her to dominate Friday Night SmackDown. She is a star. She can be a centerpiece for your women's division and a true face for WWE, and hopefully they realize that. And based on the video packages as of late, they see something in her, and I hope they keep their eyes open for the EST of WWE. Next up was the most emotional segment of the night. It was the New Day's farewell address. And I might get emotional talking about this because Big E, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston have been a constant on WWE television for the past 6 years. And when this gimmick initially started, it did not work because they were pigeonholed in a role that wasn't them. And they had to really tell Vince McMahon, we know us better than you know us. We got to go out there and be ourselves. And sure enough, they did. They turned New Day Rocks into a chant that was originally New Day Sucks, and to the fans reverted to New Day Rocks because they were so entertaining as a heel trio. And I'll never forget the turn that flipped them over to this entertaining group that will stand the test of time for WWE. And it was when Titus O'Neil legit won Father of the Year. And Kofi was so upset that Xavier and Big E campaigned for Kofi to be the real Father of the Year. They had a sign and a banner. And when Kofi skipped to the ring on a Monday Night Raw 5 years ago, it sent me, I died laughing. And that was the moment they figured it out. And they were an entertaining heel trio ever since. At SummerSlam, you had people cheering for them because they were so damn entertaining, and that was no easy feat. I was just impressed by how they was able to flip that crowd from hating them to loving them because they were so damn good. And I think about all the title reigns and the feuds with the Bar and the Usos in 2017, the rap battles and the booty hoes and the pancakes and the trombone by Xavier Woods, and just providing joy when things seem so dark at times in WWE. And then we experienced Kofi Mania last year, something that came out of nowhere, but it was meant to be in the moment. And it was a cultural moment as Kofi was the first African-born WWE champion, seeing that emotion from the crowd and from Xavier and Big E in that moment to present him with the actual true blue WWE championship, his family celebrating in the ring. And you see the videos going viral of people celebrating in the stadium and at bars and at homes and house parties. It was an amazing losing moment. And it was completely shitty how Kofi lost that title to Brock Lesnar in like 8 seconds last year during the series premiere of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. But we will never have that moment taken away from us. And I would treasure it for the rest of my life. And now we see Big E on his own journey. A guy that has truly been underutilized as a singles performer for a very long time. Incredibly gifted in the ring, highly entertaining on the mic, and knows when to get serious. And we love E's lovable demeanor, but he can give you that edge when need be to really put someone or himself over the top in a meaningful way. And if the end game truly is him becoming the Universal Champion between now and WrestleMania, I'm all in. And the reunion of the New Day celebrating with Big E, and I hope it's with people, if we can get this pandemic under control, that would be a moment. So the big finale for the New Day finale was truly heartwarming. As they spoke from the heart, Kofi is tearing up, Biggie's trying to hold it together, Xavier's losing it. It was truly moving. And if people were there, I think they would have been moved just as much, because their friendship is so strong and they love each other like brothers. But the solace we have is that we will still see them on Up, Up, Down, Down. I'm assuming that Xavier would get them together every chance he can get playing video games. We still have the New Day podcast every Monday, wherever you listen to your podcasts, including mine. Yes, complete cheap plug. I am not above it, just saying. But we will miss them together. We will miss Big E introducing his boys as 9-time tag team champions every single time they come to the ring. I'm gonna miss them wilding out and making us laugh. And it's very telling that Michael Cole and Corey Graves got choked up on commentary because it was so moving how they really love each other. And I'm gonna miss that more than anything else. So we got a 6-man tag team match with The Bar reunited. Sheamus and Cesaro with Cesaro's new tag team partner, Shinsuke Nakamura. And this was a really good send-off for the New Day. A strong 6-man tag team match. The New Day's tag team work is always exceptional, trying and doing new things and hitting it flawlessly. Kofi was hot early on. They took this crazy knee from Nakamura as him and Sheamus had him elevated for Cesaro to hit him with a suplex on the floor in a pretty sick spot. And eventually we had Sheamus yank Kofi from the ring apron by the hair onto the floor, which led to a commercial break. But eventually, Kofi hit the SOS on Sheamus, got the hot tag to Big E and Xavier as they clean house. And the closing sequence was pretty darn good, as we had The Bar reuniting ever so briefly as Cesaro and Sheamus hit Kofi Kingston with the White Noise combo from the top rope for a near fall. The Big E broke up. We had Xavier go through the ropes, check out Shinsuke Nakamura before getting clotheslined by Cesaro, but Big E took him out the big ending before he was taken out the ring by Shinsuke Nakamura. From there, we had Kofi and Sheamus as the last two men standing in the ring, and Kofi sidestepped Sheamus as Sheamus went shoulder first into the ring post, which allowed Kofi to tag in Xavier, and he made the tag to Big E, and they hit the midnight hour on Sheamus to pick up the final win as a trio. And they hugged in the ring. Xavier was crying. Kofi was trying to keep it together. And Big E was consoling them, saying, "Thank you for these amazing 6 years together. I will never forget it. We will never forget it, you guys. We appreciate everything you have done as a unit and just presenting excellence every single time you stepped foot in that ring. You brought the funny, you brought excitement, you brought high quality wrestling, and most importantly, you brought heart to everything you did. And when the day comes for Big E to become champion, whether the WWE or Universal Champ, Kofi and Xavier be there with open arms and hugs and tears and everything in between, and I will be an absolute wreck for all the right reasons, and I'm sure I'm not the only one. It's a rarity to have a group separate and there is no heel turn, and that's completely refreshing. And if they can go by as being the only faction in wrestling history not to turn on each other, that would be quite the feat. And there are no three men more deserving of that honor than Xavier Woods, Kofi Kingston, and Big E. So thank you so much for the laughter, the joy, the happy tears, and everything in between. And until next time, thank you, New Day. Next up was the return of Daniel Bryan, as he was very excited to be in the Thunderdome. I love Daniel Bryan, one of the best to ever do it between those ropes. And it appears we might have our first teased feud on SmackDown with Seth Rollins, and I was so happy to see that until the Mysterios popped up once again after Seth Rollins interrupted Daniel Bryan as he was really running down the talent on SmackDown, such as Bianca Belair and the Wyatt squads, Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan and Aleister Black and Kevin Owens. And Seth Rollins was miffed that he was left off that list, but he says maybe we can join together and build a future in our image. And Daniel says, no, and quite frankly, what I think you're doing and what you stand for is stupid. And they got in a fight, and Daniel Bryan whooped his ass, and Rollins ran away until the Mysterios stopped him midway through. And Bryan says, well, you guys have at it. He left. And then Murphy comes out to stand by Seth Rollins, and then he turns on Rollins, beats his ass, and then the Mysterios don't know what to think or say as Murphy offers his hand as a sign of a truce, and they say, you've done too much dirt, we don't believe you, and they left. And I don't blame them. He has a lot to prove to them in terms of truly changing his ways for the better. No Aaliyah or Angie Mysterio to be found. Maybe they'll be back in future weeks, as the storyline will never seemingly come to an end. But if I get Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins at the end of the rainbow at some point, that will make me a very happy camper, because it's fresh and interesting. And as for Dominik and Rey Mysterio, I adore them, but I do want Dominik to have fresh opponents. Seth Rollins, seasoned veteran, Murphy, seasoned veteran. He needs to work with more people that can elevate his in-ring game even more, because the one thing that will happen by working with a Rollins and a Murphy repeatedly, your matches fall into a pattern. It's a good pattern, but it's very repetitive, and you need to stylistically switch things up from time to time against opponents that can bring out something different in you each time. That needs to happen on SmackDown. Hopefully it will, because you do have a plethora of talent at your disposal, along with his father guiding his steps every step of the way. It's not bad. We have a legend like Rey Mysterio as your father guiding you on your wrestling journey, which is always a good thing. And as for Daniel Bryan, welcome back. He is a voice in that WWE writer's room for SmackDown. He's a quality filter that can sift through the bullshit, get to Vince McMahon, as we can have possibly the best possible product on display. And it's been apparent that those changes have been happening ever so slowly on SmackDown over the last couple of months, which is a very good thing in my book. And here's to more changes in the months to come, and let's hope it all makes sense. Next up was the contract signing between Sasha Banks and Bayley for their SmackDown Women's Championship match inside Hell in a Cell next Sunday on the WWE Network. And I thought Sasha looked like a superstar, dressed for the fashion gods. She dresses like a star, she looks like a star, she talks like a star, and she performs like a star. And Bayley was right there with her every step of the way. And I thought Sasha has been cutting some of the best promos of her career as of late. And she had nothing but facts for Bayley. She says, how can you say that I was going to turn on you first when I was always there for you? When you was left behind in NXT, who called you to the main roster to be my tag team partner? It was me. Who helped you win your first Raw Women's Championship on Monday Night Raw almost 4 years ago? It was me. Did you forget about our tag team title reigns as well? Because that was me too. Your title defenses for the last year or so, half of those defenses came because of me and what I did for you. So don't say that I was going to turn on you. You were my best friend, and that's a fact. And it goes back to that convoluted breakup they almost had a couple of years ago. But it should be noted that Sasha Banks told Bayley that she loved her, and they worked things out and eventually became the inaugural Women's Tag Team Champions at Elimination Chamber a year and a half ago. So that's a true story. Despite how dumb that breakup was initially, they worked through that bullshit and got to where they are right now to make this match mean something. And Bayley walked away without signing the contract, but Sasha did. And Sasha says, I will assure you, you will sign this contract before Hell in a Cell. And that's how the segment came to an end. No physicality between the two last night. And I know some fans think this is the underwhelming feud after the turn last month. I do want to say that I don't like overcomplicating a simple story. You don't have to add extra shit to make it more difficult than it has to be. Sometimes playing it simple is the best way to go. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to add junk to the proceedings. What I think will happen is you will get one final sell next week and have the match next Sunday. And that match is a culmination of 5 years of growth and maturity from Bailey and Sasha Banks. This is their magnum opus for us. I'm really hoping that's the case. And this will be their watershed moment as performers inside that structure. I believe in my heart, if it's produced and presented properly, this could be one of the best WWE matches of the year, and I'm not blowing smoke up anyone's asses when I say that. Bayley and Sasha are arguably having their best year ever. And that's saying something from where they were 5 years ago. And that's going to be a culmination of that, if they are allowed to tell that story. And I don't need extra accoutrements to make this feel special than it already is. Let that work be told in that cell and in that ring. Let the violence and chaos ensue in a controlled environment. I don't need extra stuff. I don't need blow-off matches 5 times prior to the pay-per-view. Just give me a slow roll and let that final heat take place inside Hell in a Cell. I can assure you they will make up for it inside that structure if they are allowed to do what they are meant to do in this moment. And now it is time for our main event segment featuring the tribal chief of WWE, Roman Reigns, is no longer the big dog. God, Michael Cole, as he defended the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman, who was now Monday Night Raw. And this was a classic Strowman-Roman Reigns match. They always work well together. Their chemistry is very unique. And Strowman got over 3 years ago by beating up the babyface Roman Reigns. And he became a de facto babyface in that process. And it made him into a star. And unfortunately, that was his peak, because we all know what happened from there. The Brock Lesnar match at No Mercy that year was very underwhelming, kind of exposed him a bit, and he never got back to where he was supposed to be as a monster. Yes, he was the Universal Champion this year, but it didn't mean much at the end of the day. And here we are, it's 2020, he's on Monday Night Raw, and he's going to be feuding with Keith Lee, and I hope that is an opportunity for him to pay it forward by getting Keith Lee over as a big-time star as Keith continues his ascent up the ranks on Monday nights. But as for the match itself, very good. We had Strowman dominating Roman early on by tossing him over the barricade and really hitting him with high-impact moves. Then Roman kicking out at 2.5 at one point as he hit him with a choke slam in the ring. But Roman Reigns, ever the crafty heel, has become a low blow artist as he low blowed Strowman during the cover as he kicked out at 2. And we saw Braun Strowman holding on to the family jewels as Roman hit him with a spear, but Strowman recovered and went for the power slam, but got caught in a guillotine by Roman Reigns. You heard that right. Roman Reigns locked in a guillotine, got him down to the mat and made the big man tap out as Roman successfully defended the Universal Championship. And after the match was over, we had Jey Uso appear on the main stage to stare down his cousin, and Roman returned the favor in kindness. He speared Strowman a second time before grabbing a steel chair and hitting a prone Strowman in the back with it. And then things got a little weird as Strowman was moaning in the corner. It was very ASMR. It was very SmackDown After Dark and very unusual, to say the least. But Jey made his way all the way into the ring, and Roman was like, listen, I love you. I'm trying to give you a second chance. This will happen to you inside Hell in a Cell, but I'm all about giving people second chances to do the right thing. So I'm going to turn my back and give you this steel chair and you can do whatever you like. And Uso is tempted to hit Roman in the back and he refuses to do so. Instead, he decides to punch Roman in the face and deliver a super kick saying, you love me? You love me? I love you too. And he smashes Roman in the back with the steel chair repeatedly. I loved the emotion coming off of Jey Uso when he taps into the very gut of his soul. It's amazing to watch. And then we have the officials try to break things up, try to get him off of Roman. Then Roman recovers and delivers a devastating Superman punch to Jey Uso, and he falls flat. And Roman says, I love you, but I try to give you that second chance. There are no more second chances. He walks away disappointed as SmackDown goes off the air at the top of the hour. I thought this was an outstanding closing segment. Jey Uso and Roman Reigns, they are the best damn thing going in WWE, with a few exceptions as of right now. I love this feud. Their Hell in a Cell match, I Quit style, is completely justifiable for the Universal Championship. It's going to be another highly emotional match. They're going to beat the hell out of each other, and then Roman is going to make his cousin say, I quit, and then the real consequences begin. And I wonder what those consequences are, but this was a stellar way to wrap up the show, and no one brings emotion as of late like Jey Uso from the heart. And Roman Reigns is that guy he was always meant to be. He exudes confidence. He's built different. He's operating at a different level right now, from how he carries himself to his performances to his physique. My God, he is built for days. And it's truly remarkable to see this transformation in 2020, where he was a few years ago when he was supposed to be anointed at WrestleMania 31 against Brock Lesnar, until Seth Rollins broke up that party by cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase. To see the evolution of the multiple coronations to where he is now, this is the true coronation of Roman Reigns, of who he was supposed to be and who he's meant to be in this moment. And I cannot applaud him enough for his performances over the past couple of months. And I know the best is yet to come. And with that, this wraps up the season premiere of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox, a pretty solid show with a few exceptions, most notably the Street Profits non-existent tag team title match against Dolph Ziggler and Robert Roode, as that ended via DQ in less than 3 minutes. So that was quite unremarkable. There were no women's matches last night. I know some fans were not happy about that on social media, but I am of the mindset that we got a great highlight package on Bianca Belair, a great contract signing between Bayley and Sasha Banks for the SmackDown Women's Championship inside Hell in a Cell next Sunday on the WWE Network. I would love to see Liv and Ruby and Bianca and Billie Kay and Zelina Vega. I would love to see them, but if you're going to give me 2 minutes like the tag team title match, I don't want to see it. Give me a sampling of what's to come. And you can do that via highlight packages for Bianca Belair. Then next week, then we can ease our way into the women's matches once again, because this division does have potential to be great if everyone is positioned accordingly. But I don't want throwaway matches that mean nothing. If you're going to give me that, I'd rather have nothing at all. I don't want people like a Bianca Belair or a Liv Morgan to eat unnecessary losses on television. That's why I was not as upset when they were not a part of Money in the Bank earlier this year, because if they was going to lose as qualifying matches, I don't want to see their momentum stunted. So I can take a week without women's action. We'll be back next week, hopefully. Now, if this becomes a trend 2 or 3 weeks down the line, then yes, raise holy hell. But this week, I'm taking a more subdued approach until further notice. Overall, I thought SmackDown was a pretty solid show. It definitely helped that we have a lot of star power on Friday nights now. It's about how they're positioned in the weeks to come. And this tag team division needs some TLC. And I'm not talking tables, ladders, and chairs. We need some tender love and care to get this division together for the Street Profits, because they're too good to have less than stellar talent to work with. You do have Shinsuke Nakamura and Cesaro. You do have Robert Roode and Dolph Ziggler. But who's got next after that? We shall see. And hopefully they can build some teams up to make these tag team titles mean something, not only on Monday nights, but Fridays and on Wednesday nights for NXT as well. And on that note, this wraps up episode number 38 of the SmackDown Wind Down, recapping the highs and lows from the season premiere of Friday Night SmackDown on Fox. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can follow me on social media at Lady Wrestling X on Twitter and on Instagram at WrestleSubtopia. They can find me tweeting and gramming about these podcast shows that drop on the semi-daily, recapping Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown on Fox, AEW Dynamite, and NXT. Feel free to download past episodes on all of your favorite podcast directories, dating back to episode number 1 of the Raw Verdict Recap and the Fallout from the 2020 Warrior Rumble, every AEW Dynamite, every episode of NXT, all the potpourris, all the takeovers, all the pay-per-views for WWE and AEW, as I get you ready for Hell in a Cell next Sunday on the WWE Network in full gear for for AEW in November. You know what to do. Search WrestleSubtopia on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn plus Amazon Alexa, and Spotify. I'll be back Tuesday morning with episode number 39 of the Raw Verdict, recapping the season premiere from WWE's flagship show, Monday Night Raw. Until then, enjoy your Saturday, your Sunday, and your Manic Monday. Stay safe out there, and don't forget to wash those hands. See you later, boys and girls. Take care.